All right, welcome to class. Before we get underway, are there comments, questions, concerns, other things for me? Yes?
Can we talk about the frustum to box?
Absolutely, yes. I think we're going to have to talk about a lot of the quiz. Other things? All right, let's talk about a lot of the quiz. We had the lowest score I've ever seen on a quiz before. One of the questions had 7% correct. Anyway, I actually rekeyed that one, assuming I had failed to teach you something. But quite a lot of these are a little off. So we see there's already some issues about frustum perspective early on. The idea that it's not affine, only half of you seem to have understood. We'll talk about how it's not affine a little bit more. You did all right with some of the matrices until we got the frustum to box matrix. It didn't help any. This was a select none answer, right? Anyway, oops. So we'll talk more about that as well. I do want to talk though about some of the other things that I think will be a little easier to describe. So you're right, sitting up chair, centered at the origin. You want an upside down chair, centered over at 10, 0, 0. If R flips it over and T translates it, what's the order you do things? Most of you got this right, but the second most common answer put it in the wrong order. So if you were to translate it before you rotate it, then you'll translate it out, and then you'll rotate the world, and end up at the wrong side, because all rotations happen relative to the origin, at least if it's a purely rotation matrix, right? So you have to rotate it, and then move it, so it ends up where you want in the right orientation. Anyway. We also had some trouble with some of the depth algorithms. You did all right. Although I have some impression that perhaps some people didn't actually read the text. Because we said that it should work for all camera angles exterior to the objects described. I think that is why that most of you thought backface culling would work for two cubes, is because you thought of them side by side, not from other sides. Yes?
So, I guess my question is on the last one, multicolored graphs, why wouldn't depth buffer work?
Yeah. How many different depth values would I have to get all of the grass in front of the correct other grass? So could you make some depth buffer work? Maybe if you had, I don't know, like a 100-bit depth buffer or something.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the surface of a sphere.
Yeah.
I didn't know why any of the triangles would intersect with other ones because
they won't.
I said only backface culling would be necessary.
Yeah.
Yes, I didn't ask what was necessary. I asked what would be sufficient.
Okay.
Gotcha. Is this an ambiguity in the wording of the question?
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
I'm seeing a lot of no's. Yes, there's an ambiguity in the wording of the question. No, there isn't. Wow, we are really half and half here. I will have to think about if there's a way I can give you points for the other interpretation, which I literally didn't even occur to me until now. So sorry about that, but I don't know how to make that work. I will try. Because many of these, right, like any one of these is sufficient. It doesn't matter. Pick one. And so if you gave just one answer for that, I will see if I can come up with a good way of making that work. You had a follow-up question?
I already knew this, but my ambiguity was between which algorithms would be sufficient on their own or which set of algorithms would be sufficient.
You know, I understand the ambiguity now that you pointed out. I just hadn't thought about it in advance. And now I'm just trying to figure out if there's some way of getting the answers for the other one to be meaningful. Because all selections of question 7 would be okay. Any subset of those would be sufficient at all, as long as you select at least one thing, or two, or three. And so I don't know how to make that into meaningful grade. But I recognize that there is an ambiguity in the wording. I could quibble about algorithm versus algorithms, but it's a quibble. It's not a real thing. So I will see what I could do to try to make that fair. and probably fail, but I will try. I apologize for that ambiguity. Other questions about question 7 through 12 here? Yeah?
For 11, I guess we're not assuming that Painter's algorithm is using the intersection thing, the area subdivision. Because if you're using that, it should have worked, right?
Right, so if you're using area subdivision, that's actually not part of Painter's algorithm, that's an addition to Painter's algorithm. If you wrote a comment about that, at some point I will get to read that, right? We lost our TA, so I'm now going to be reading all of your comments and quizzes, and it might be a little slower than our TA, but I'll get to those eventually. I'm concerned by this number here. Backface culling. Do people understand why backface culling wouldn't work? Would you like me to say more about this? They think they, yeah.
Can you just draw an example of a situation where it would not work?
Oh yeah, sure.
More than 100 cubes.
Yeah, all right, so I have a cube. And I have another cube next to it. Okay.
And the normal vectors of those two cubes.
It doesn't actually matter where the normal vectors are pointing. It just matters I can put one behind the other. Yeah.
If you were to sort it and then draw the lower one first, wouldn't it kind of work?
So that's the Painter's algorithm.
Yeah, but.
So yes, it would. Right, and I don't know. I'm worried when I see things like this. Yeah.
So like, yes, how would you? Because that implies that like in the implementation, there's like no concept of like what's drawn first.
Sure, there is. But what if this is drawn first and this is drawn second? Then look at it from the other side. One of the cubes will be first in the order that's drawn. So if this one happens to be in front, just move the camera around back here and look from the back, and poof, now they're out of order. And if I'm changing the order as I move the camera, then that's the Painter's algorithm. I feel like I still haven't communicated this effectively, but I don't know what else to say. Can anybody help me? Anybody want to give a different explanation of why this is broken? Yeah?
Oh, me? the cube in the back, the face to the left of the S.
Yeah, this face here. Let's call that the red face, shall we?
The red face is not a back-facing face, i.e. the normal vector is pointing towards the camera, so it will not be cold. And then it could potentially render on top of the front cube and it would not work.
Yes, I agree. Notice if it was cold, that would also be a problem. Because then we wouldn't see a face we should see some of. Yeah?
Essentially what it comes down to is that in order to render this correctly, you need to partially cull a face.
Yeah.
And you can't do that.
And you can't do that. That is correct. All right. So, we had a lot of these, even when majority were right. These are worryingly high numbers of wrongs to me. I mean, apparently the majority got most of them right, but I'm still worried about that. You know, 30% minority worries me. Does anybody want me to talk more about any of these algorithms? Anybody want to talk about any of these examples? Try to draw a picture? Yeah?
I have a question. So for question 12, the depth buffer?
Yeah.
Isn't like, let's say we have a 32-bit depth buffer.
Yeah.
It should be able to store 2 to the 32 different depths.
Yep.
And that's like over a billion.
Yeah.
That should be enough for the vast carpet of grass.
Possibly. But probably not, because the depth buffer is allocated in a logarithmic space. So it's likely the distant grass would not have enough precision. Also, I have never seen a 32-bit depth buffer in my life. Most I've ever seen is 16, although that isn't immediately obvious. I may rethink giving points for this because so many people misunderstood it. But it is sort of unambiguously false. This is the classic example of the failure of a depth buffer.
But it's not like a failure in like the theory of the depth buffer. It's a failure in like
in the buffer. Scaling. It's a failure in the depth side, not the buffer side, not the depth side. Right? There's nothing wrong with the depth. There's a problem with the buffer. It's a buffer, therefore it is finite. Yes.
Why does a back face call fail for a rectilinear maze?
Oh yeah, sure. Rendered from the inside. All right, so I have some rectilinear maze. So, all right, I am in some sort of maze, and I'm looking down at some T intersection. Okay, the rest of this wall is front facing. But hidden. Yes?
This is basically just the two cubes example again.
This is another version of the two cubes. Like, the failure of back face calling is always there is something you can't, that's behind something else. Yes?
So, you said that Painter's algorithm works for this.
Yeah.
But I guess I didn't understand why we're guaranteed to not have the issue of we're unable to sort things correctly in distance. Like, can you look at it at an angle in which.
One yeah.
Fails to be sorted.
So because it's rectilinear, yeah, that may be.
From any angle, you can rotate it so the walls aren't that rectilinear.
Usually, there are two different primary axes you could sort on that would both work.
Okay.
Rectilinear is very forgiving.
Okay.
In that sense, I don't know. But like if we picture it from above, right? Everything is in a grid. And so all of our walls, like they all sort nicely from every, like pick an arbitrary direction, sort in either of its two axes, and you'll end up with a valid sorting. Yes?
When do you actually use backface calling? Because it seems like we never use it for anything because it sucks. With
yeah, yeah, right. It's the one you don't check all the time. Use it primarily to cut the work in half.
But you can't use it when there's more than
one. Not on its own.
It isn't sufficient, but it's an assist. It's almost never wrong to use. Okay? It doesn't remove everything you want to remove, but it removes stuff you want to remove. And it does it very efficiently. Right? And so we typically use it to remove half of the scene and then use something else to do something nice with the other half, so we're doing half of the work. The only time we don't use backface calling is if we know we want some particular triangle to be seen from both sides, which is relatively uncommon. Yes?
Will we talk about occlusion calling at some point?
What do you mean by occlusion calling?
It's a technique used in video games where when the camera moves, it doesn't.
The like field of view calling?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it calls what's outside of it.
Yeah, we talked about that last time.
Okay.
Do you want, I can say more about it.
No, you don't need to, I was just curious.
Yeah, we talked about this idea that like this is why when you step over a boundary, things pop in and out of existence.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Because you tried to say this is the subset. Right? So this is actually a classic thing to do in a rectilinear maze, is say if you're here pointing this way, this square is just, you're not looking at that. And so we'll just divide the world into places you could be and ways you could look and not show most of the world. And you can do that either as just straight field of view. You can also do occlusion that says, I know from every spot in this cell, every spot in this cell is invisible. But it's some sort of pre-computing for all possible spaces. And that's hard math to do right, which is why most of you seemed to have seen video games that did it wrong. Yes? Okay. All right. So, anything else about our, yes?
For the carpet, wouldn't
yeah.
it be like, safe to assume that some of the fibers overlap, at least like three?
For the carpet of multicolored grass?
Yeah. So Painter's algorithm wouldn't work?
Yeah.
Yeah, I may have to drop that question, which is going to annoy me. It is possible for a single, but I mean, the vertical makes that impossible. For some definition of vertical, right? If you thought vertical could be tilty, then maybe it doesn't. So I may have to throw out this question, much to my annoyance. Yeah. Oh well. I mean, there isn't. Assuming you believe it's vertical, then no. They're vertical. So. I guess you could still think they're overlapping. Meh. All right, we may have to toss that. All right, let me also talk about the question we all got wrong. Well, all but three of you. Kudos to those three. But for the rest of you, yeah. I have never seen a... I changed the points down to zero because everybody got it wrong. I assume that meant I failed to teach it. So now nobody has points there. Yes?
I mean, people got it wrong is because we assume when you said vector, you meant vector. Like, and vectors have.
Sorry, down here?
Zero. No, for 13. Yeah.
You mentioned that the vectors in Quadratus coordinates have a w coordinate of 0, whereas a 0.7w coordinate of 1.
We all assume they're all.
Well, you clearly did not all assume that, because even that's not the majority. Yeah, and this actually comes to one of the problems we have in graphics is we use the word vector to mean everything. Right? We use the word vector to mean the concept, the mathematicians, it's a point or a direction. And we use it to mean it's all of the things in a point. And we use it to mean it's the difference between a point and a direction. Yes?
So when you have like homogeneous coordinates, the entire point is that the W vector has like 1?
If it's a point. Or 0 if it's a direction. That's what question 14 was trying to get at.
So what you're saying is like when you add them together, it becomes a point because when you add them, it's 1.
All right, let's really talk about this. We'll also talk about frustums. So we definitely need to talk about this. We definitely need to talk about frustums. I'll come and do a whole thing. Yes?
How would you refer to a vector if everything is a vector?
Yeah, that's right.
If you were to phrase question 13 the way we started was.
I would have said normals.
Normals.
Yeah. But
same thing.
Yeah. Anyway. So let's talk about frustums. We definitely need to talk about frustums. We definitely need to talk about homogeneous vectors a little bit more. I also want to talk just a little bit, like this is a disturbing trend in question 14 as well, although I guess it's really homogeneous coordinates, so maybe we'll do that together. So let's start by talking more about frustums. All right. So we talked about how affine matrices have that at the bottom. And other stuff, other places, right? The last column is translation. The main box is scale and rotation. This is the definition of affine transformations. But you don't have to do affine. We don't have to have 0, 0, 0, 1 here. And so we can do lots of things here. All of them in general do some set of perspective transformations. But the one we do, the one we always do, is the frustum transformation. Now I'm going to start with something that isn't a frustum transformation. And then we're going to get to the one that is as a way of explaining it, because clearly this did not come across when I jumped directly to the one that is last time. Let's suppose I have this down at the bottom. And let's just make this the identity matrix up above. Okay? So let's consider this particular matrix. This matrix, given any arbitrary x, y, z, 1, gives me back x, y, z, z. Okay? And then, because homogeneous coordinates, that is the same thing as x over z, y over z, 1, 1. Question about the math before I try drawing pictures about what that means. All right, we're now going to try drawing pictures about what this means. I'm just going to pick a point. Let's say this point here is 0.2, 0.2. Oh, well, and I guess it also has other coordinates. So let's say I'm going to draw, because it'll be easier for me to draw here, I'll draw x and z. So I'm going to say it's 0.2, 0, 0.2, 1. Because it's a point, it has 1 in that last coordinate. Where does this get translated to by this math? Well, it goes out to where z is 1. And then what will its x be? Also 1. So it's going to pop up to that point right there. Okay? And then if I pick some other point also in this diagonal line, it's going to go to the same place. So if I were to pick here 0.6, 0, 0.6, 1, it will also go to that same location. Okay? So what happens with this is we're essentially just pushing everything away from my origin until its z is 1. or pulling it towards the origin if it started further out. And it puts everything on a plane. Now, I could actually use this to do perspective transformation if I don't care about depth. Okay? So if I imagined that here is the eyeball sitting here staring out at the scene, and this is the canvas that I want to paint things on, and I have some object I want to paint sitting out here in the world, this will project all parts of it down onto the canvas and will make me a picture of that object. But in the process, it will lose the depth. Okay? So this matrix does help me do perspective projection, but loses some information I want to keep around. Questions so far? All right. What I want to do is I do want to do this projection kind of thing, but I want to keep z as a different value. So I want to make sure that z doesn't always end up as 1. So the way we're going to make sure that z does not always end up as 1 is we're going to make z have something slightly different. So I can still do this if I want, so that z still impacts my w, but I want to make something else down there work as well. Because what I'm going to want to do is I want to take some frustum and I want to turn it into a square. Now I can actually just solve for the elements of the matrix. Okay? If I were to just take these points and pass them through the matrix and say I want them to have these values, I can back solve for what I needed to put in the matrix in the first place. Okay? And it will turn out that I'm dividing by z and doing other things. I'm also translating around so that things are not centered at the not centered where they were before, and so on. So let's just look at what that looks like. Let's just look for where somebody else has done this math for us. Okay, here is the matrix that does that work. Okay. So here it is. It's just this thing. They've got some scaling going in here because generally you want to make the scene smaller. That's how you pick the points and so on. But notice I am using z for everything. The reason I need to use z for everything is because I need to change where z is based on z. And that means that my frustum gets slid around. So I have to move everything else to sort of keep it in as a frustum space. Okay, so I still end up putting, they have a negative 1 instead of a positive 1 because they have the camera pointing the other direction. That's mostly irrelevant. But we end up causing z to be moved and multiplied by something. We have everything dependent on z, and this will move those points to those coordinates. And there's a description about where we want those coordinates to be and what all these things mean. Okay. You can derive different versions of this. You can make something other than z. You can pick x or y to be the place. But you're going to get some permutation, some variation on this basic matrix. We showed this, I don't know, for maybe 10 seconds when we talked about matrices. Just said, you can do it. Clearly, that wasn't enough. I apologize. Questions about this matrix? Yes.
So are we supposed to like understand how to get that matrix?
I wouldn't bother. Okay. I mean, if you like linear algebra, you're welcome to rederive it. If you don't, you can be glad somebody else did. Linear algebra is not a prereq for this course. So I'm just going to say linear algebra, poof. And if you want me to walk through the derivation, feel free to drop by my office sometime and we'll do that. Other questions? All right. Let me make one other comment about the general things we can do with this matrix. Okay? In general, these coordinates have to have come from an affine space. Okay? Because those don't depend on the bottom row. And we said without the bottom row, it's affine. So those come affine. And this also comes affine. So we end up with an affine point divided by an affine coordinate. What that can do is perspective. Okay? It can rotate, scale, stretch, translate, and divide by some line equation. Okay? So we can take that last step, essentially means I can take whatever my picture was, and there is some matrix I can multiply this picture by that will divide by how far each point is from this point along that vector. Which will mean anything down here will stretch out, and anything far away will go in, and we'll end up sort of applying some sort of squishing effect here, right? And we'll get our thing all squished, okay? That is what that last row lets us do, is divide by distance from some hyperplane in practice, but it's easier to think about a distance along some arbitrary vector placed someplace in space. The one we always pick is the eye and the direction we're pointing, because it does nice things. If you decide to try to use these matrices, however, to, say, render spherical geometry, you'll pick a different baseline. It will still do this, and it will work out just fine. And if you're interested in non-Euclidean geometry, anything with a constant Riemannian metric space will be able to be done with this matrix systems as well. Not that that matters a great deal. All right. Any other questions about our frustum? Okay, now let's talk a little bit more about our homogeneous point versus normal versus vector mess. Okay, x, y, z, w equals ax, ay, az, aw for all a not equal to 0. Right? This is a definition of homogeneous. Or homogeneous, depending on your perspective. Okay? So, this makes math hard. Okay? Let's just take an example. Let's suppose I decide I want to add two vectors. So I'll add 1, 0, 0, 0, and 0, 2, 0, 0. And I will end up with 1, 2, 0, 0. Hooray. But both of these could have been scaled by anything without changing their meaning. So I could have instead have had 20. And this vector points in a dramatically different distance than the one without the red zero. Okay? So we have to have some meaning of what is the right scale before you add. You have to have that. It isn't defined without that. Okay? So how do we do that? This is more nuanced than we're going to get to all of, but the two basic rules. Points have w equals 1. Okay? And then offsets are point minus point with no additional scaling. Okay? These two rules will give us most of what we want to do, but occasionally we want direction without general offset. Okay? So direction will have magnitude of our direction vector in the L2 norm will equal 1. Ugh, that's more complicated than I really want to explain. This is the ordinary kind of length you have probably learned about, even if you haven't taken linear algebra and learned about different norms. Okay? We want the standard hypotenuse kind of thing to be 1. Okay? Now, directions can't be added, because they're just directions. It doesn't mean anything to add directions. They can be linearly combined, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we talk about lighting today. But offsets and points can be combined with math. Notably, because points always have w equals 1, the offsets always have w equals 0. Because they're point minus point. W minus w always gets us 0. Okay? We were allowed to multiply an offset by anything and still have an offset, but a different magnitude offset. So we just don't scale it. We leave it as is, unless we need it to only be a direction without magnitude, and then we set its direction distance down to 1. So this will also have w equals 0, if we're talking about a direction only. Because the 1 gives me sort of location, sort of. Yes?
So these are all vectors.
These are all homogeneous vectors.
Yeah. Is it in the way you were discussing it in the question?
As I worded the question, yes, that is correct. They are all vectors. Yeah. Now, sometimes because physics uses vector in Euclidean space, not homogeneous coordinates, they will talk about vector meaning an offset. Okay? And because computer graphics is not a large enough player to have completely changed this vocabulary, sometimes we will too, because that's what they do. And so sometimes we'll talk about this as being a vector. Sometimes we'll talk about the whole set of them as all being vectors. Sometimes we'll talk about a direction as just being a unit vector. Okay? So we'll use the word vector for most subsets of this list. That is annoying. I'm sorry. Okay? We could, in this class, decide we have particular language we like, but the rest of the world wouldn't believe us. Okay? That's just sort of aside. It feels like I have some version of this conversation in almost every class I teach. We use words wrong in this field. Anyway, but we do, so we live with it. All right, questions about any of these ideas? Yes?
All right, could you go over again how the first rule about you can like scale things applies to like adding offsets?
So you can't scale offsets.
Okay.
Okay? So you may not scale the offsets.
Is that like mathematical property, like w equals 1 minus w equals 0, or is that just like...
No, it is. Offsets are sort of like, they aren't really homogeneous, but we can get them out of homogeneous and do interesting things and put them back in later.
Okay.
So in the end, we use points and directions. Those are homogeneous in more or less standard form. But in between, we don't. Another way of putting this is that homogeneous vectors don't have a well-defined addition operator. So if we need to do addition or subtraction, we have to get away from standard homogeneous points. Because addition doesn't work there. Yes?
What does W have to do with scalability?
I don't know if I understand the question.
You said like W equals 0, therefore it's like not scalable.
I don't remember saying that, so I don't remember what I was trying to say when I did. Yes?
What you meant is that we don't really have a reference for the scale of x, y, and z if there's no reference w.
I agree with this statement.
So like, when w is 1, you can tell exactly what scale x, y, and z are supposed to be because w is 1. If you tried to scale it up, you can see that w is scaled.
How far is this vector from the origin? Not a defined answer. Because I can multiply it by any number and change how far it is from the origin.
So W is like your space multiplier?
Sort of? W is the thing that allows affine transformations to work. It is the imagine. It's not imaginary in the mathematical sense. It is the fictional coordinate. Okay? It is the extra number we added to make matrices do things that matrices weren't meant to do.
Having it as 0 as 1 just makes it
convenient. So 1 is almost required. This is the main reason. This allows us to use affine transformations. It enables translations. It enables perspective. Knowing that it is 1 and setting it back to 1. Knowing this 1 allows us to do translations. Setting it back to 1 if it wasn't 1 creates the perspective. Okay? As we were talking about perspective, I said, hey, we had this step right here that was important. This step of dividing by W. I can do that because W wasn't 0 and I will force it to be 1. Here and then here, and I think I saw something out of the corner of my eye over here too. No, okay, yeah.
So in the code, does that mean that anytime we do a homogeneous matrix transformation thing, we then do another step of dividing by W?
Yep.
Okay.
You can usually wait till the end if you want, but yes.
I was going to ask a question. Is it incorrect to do that early?
Nope.
Well, okay.
You can do it as often as you want, or as rarely as you want. You just have to do it before you're done. Yeah?
So we kind of had those, like, you can add a point to a vector and get a point back rules.
Yeah.
Is there a similar table of that for point offsets and directions?
Yeah. So if you subtract point from point, you get an offset. Therefore, if you add point offset to point, you get back to a point. So these two work in that direction. It's actually true of directions as well, but then you have to say, how far in that direction do you want to go? So typically, if I think about a point plus direction, yes, that's another location, but usually I really mean point plus constant times direction. How far in that direction did I want to go? Which gets me back into sort of the offset concept. Yes?
So our quiz is going to refer to these as points, offsets, and directions, or just vectors? So.
Yeah, that's a good question. I will probably be as loose with terminology as the world and try to think more carefully about how I word it so that I'm clearer. Yeah, I think I've learned my lesson that I shouldn't have been as vague as I was. If I say vector in general, unless I clearly state otherwise, you should assume I mean mathematical vector, not geometric vector. Okay? I mean a sequence of numbers that you can do things with. Geometry has a subset of that, an interpretation of vectors, that we also deal with and will sometimes call vector, but I'll try to identify if that's the special case I mean. And sorry that I didn't communicate that well enough to make the quiz work. Both for your stress and for my lack of having something that tells me if you know this concept. Other questions about these homogeneous vectors? All right. So, I think we've dealt with things I wanted to make sure we talked about for the quiz. Anything else you'd like me to review for the quiz? Yes.
So affine matrix, the last row is always 0, 0, 0, 1.
That is correct.
So you cannot do perspective with
it. That is correct.
Okay.
Perspective is, did I not have that here somewhere? No, I guess I didn't.
That's what I was
asking. Yep. Other questions? Yeah?
Is it fair to say that, as a kind of a double check on that, that Frustum perspective is nonlinear and it's not invertible, and that's what makes it, like, you can't use it in affine with it?
It is not linear, but it is invertible. With a singularity, right? You can't do it where the thing you're dividing towards was defined as zero, but. I realize as I say that we've stopped using singularity to mean what it used to mean because of mass media. Yeah, so singularity does not refer to robots taking over the world, and it doesn't refer to black holes. It refers to a place that is one place that things behave differently. So the singularity of divide by W is W equals zero. And there's a singularity that is created for a Frustum projection. Other questions? Whew, all right. Well, we may push back our schedule, but fortunately, we have plenty of space to do that in. This is usually where I start talking a little bit about that space. We'll talk some more about it as we come up a little closer, but what do I mean by all these TBDs? I mean, there are oodles of topics we could cover. And at some point, I will send out a poll where you will vote on what you think is most interesting. I will populate this with some things that I've talked about in the past or things I think are interesting, but if there is something you think would be worth spending time on, then let me know. You don't need to let me know in person, although you're welcome to, but you're also welcome to send me an email or chat by my office or whatever it is you want. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. We'll try to put out that poll with time for me to actually plan out how it all fits. We'll probably have the poll due somewhere around the 18th, which means I'll try to talk some more about that next week. But we have plenty of time because there are so many topics in graphics and because we never teach another graphics class in this department. Yes?
Is there any chance the 3D rasterizer
could the 3D rasterizer have an extension? It could, but then you'd be crunched for your ray tracer. I set the deadlines based on how long it took people to do them relative to each other and how much time we have. I should say a little bit more about the 3D rasterizer, though. Why did I give you only 2 weeks for the 3D rasterizer? Because if you wrote your homework one well, then homework two is easy to do. And if you wrote spaghetti code for homework one, then you're going to hate homework two, okay? And so there was like a post on Piazza said, can I offer a solution to homework one? Sure, You're not going to want to read my solution, trust me. Hey, I've done this a lot, so I wrote very efficient code in number of lines of code by using like template metaprogramming and mix-ins and things you probably have never heard of to have my code write itself. Anyway, what does that mean if your homework one didn't work? It means you at least have to get the required parts working. That's why they're called required. We really do need them later on. Line less so, but really trig G really matters. All right, really matters. It is like the thing that the next homework is due. There's a couple of heads here and then here and then here. Yeah, no?
No, I was just curious to see that code.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
In homework one, in the grass browser, say like we had vectors that were going to be like X and Y and then, you know, like some RGB data.
Yeah.
When we're doing homogeneous coordinates, should we have like X, Y, Z, W?
Yep.
So just like a B.
Just add more stuff.
Okay, and then all the, what about the dividing by W thing? Do we do that?
You divide everything by W unless otherwise specified.
Apply to the color and everything.
Yep. Okay. For some things you do and for some things you don't. So this is actually described in the implementer's guide. Let's just briefly talk about. So the implementer's guide is the closest to a solution I know how to give you. And as you've discovered, it still requires a fair amount of work after you've read it. So here we have here this thing about perspective correct interpolation, where you divide. Notice how many coordinates I have here. X, Y, Z, W, normal, 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 red, green, blue, UV. This is not actually all of the ones that my solution has. I have a few more. But this is the many of you will end up with this many coordinates in your vector. And if you divide by W, you're going to have to undivide by W for some of those, but not all. So the initial, you'll only divide the geometry by W. Some of the electives will then have you divide in an undivide, which is a strange thing to say. But initially, the divide by W is for the geometry, for X, Y, Z. Other questions? Yes?
I just have a quick question about the final project.
Yeah.
So there's optional parts in the final project.
Yeah.
And we're not allowed to use extra optional from the first three on the final project? Or are we allowed to?
Yeah, so final. If you define your own project, then it's just a project. It's just one big pool of points. If you say, I don't want to think of something, I will do graphics image manipulation instead, then this falls into the same pool as everything else.
So if we do extra optional for the, like, let's say 2D raster or 3D raster, then some of those can be used in the final project?
Yeah.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Yep. Yes?
I was researching like the path drawing, the stuff that we were talking about, the vector curves.
Yeah.
And I came across a term called stencil buffer.
Yep.
And then like that was people use stencil buffers now.
Yeah.
Paths, so I was wondering if you could have
that. Yeah, I don't know if I have stencil buffers on our schedule. I don't think I do. Yeah, I don't currently. Where would that naturally belong? Yeah, we should talk about them. I don't think we'll talk about them today.
Yeah.
But could you ping me an email or something so I have record of this so I can put it in the schedule and make sure we talk about it? I don't think it's worth spending days on. It'll probably be 10, 20 minutes. But there are interesting things to say about stencil buffers. Other questions before we talk about light for a little while? All right. Whew. All right, so let's talk about light a little bit. And we'll push a lot of other topics back today. I'm going to start by not talking about how light works, but about how we draw things in real-time graphics. Okay? Most of real-time graphics, we've already talked about most pieces of the pipeline. Okay, we define some object out of triangles that represents whatever it is we think is interesting to draw. Okay, and then we put those triangles through a matrix, which does the perspective translation. And then we put this through a depth buffer. Well, then we rasterize it. So we create pixels out of that, and then we use our depth buffer after that. And then we draw. We set the pixel colors. Okay? And this ends up drawing things in the scene. But this leaves out an important aspect of the real world, which is light. Okay? So how do we compute light? Well, there's a whole lot of pieces to that. Let's start with the simplest piece to describe, which is where do we compute light? Okay? There are two basic solutions to where we compute light. We can either light the vertices. So we can light each vertex. Okay? And then we can rasterize, we will interpolate, because that's what rasterize does, we will interpolate color. And this uses, essentially, the algorithm you've already done. You have colors, you interpolate them across the triangle, you add a depth coordinate in, but huzzah. Okay? So this is one option. And this is fast because we don't compute light very often. Just once per vertex. Sometimes we can even do this once in advance if things aren't moving around. Lights and objects aren't moving around. We can light everything in advance. But certainly we don't have to light every single pixel, which is the other option. The other option is that we have normals and we interpolate those. Okay? And then after we rasterize, we add in here per pixel lighting. We could technically add it to the other side of the depth buffer instead. Which one you do just depends on what's more efficient. I guess it'd be slightly more efficient in our case to do it this way, but slightly messier to write the code. So before we draw it, we set the color with per pixel lighting, as opposed to per vertex lighting. Two different options. Both of them involve interpolating things. Notably, though, if I interpolate the normal, I often also have to interpolate the position of the object in world coordinates before the matrix. Anyway, we'll talk some more about that. But you have to interpolate a lot more stuff, and you have to do a lot of work for every single pixel. Question?
I'm confused about what the normal is.
It is the surface normal of the object.
How does that give you light?
So surface normal turns out to be what we need to compute light. We need to know the color of the object, where the light is, and the surface normal of the object. We'll talk some more about that in just a moment.
Okay, but you need it to do the per pixel.
Yep, I need it for every pixel to light every pixel.
Okay.
So I have to interpolate it to every pixel to get it to every pixel to light every pixel. I might have other things. I could have texture coordinates. I could have, I don't know, various material kind of information. Anything I would need to compute what it looks like, I'd have to interpolate. Okay? Now, these two have names. There's names for these shading models, which are different than the names of lighting models, even though the same name will be used for the system. Okay? So, warning you, we're about to use two names. So first we have Garo. I always spell Garo wrong. I should really memorize how it's spelled. I think this is close. This is called Garo shading. Named. This is the top one. Yes, I should probably have used the same color. Garo shading is we interpolate color, we light vertices. Okay? This other one, where we interpolate positions and light pixels, we call this Phong shading. Now, Garo is fine. This is what we call Garo. It's why it's Tri-G for your homework one, because you're using Garo's shading algorithm, triangles, Garo style. Anyway, Phong also names a lighting model in addition to a shading model. Okay? So Phong came up with a way of doing the per pixel lighting that is called the Phong lighting model, and then there's the Phong shading model, and sometimes people say they're using Phong shading when they mean they're using Phong lighting. Because, you know, we're bad at words. All right. But these are the two basic approaches. Increasingly, you're starting to see this called merely per pixel something. 10 years ago or so, various graphics card sellers started using this phrase instead of Phong because nobody knew what they meant or thought they meant the other thing. And so this is increasingly taking over, but in computer graphics circles, this is still usually called Phong. Anyway. So we have these two different models, but both of them need to know, given some point, either the point of some pixel or some point of the vertex of an object, how do I light it? And so both of these need to have a lighting model as well as a shading model. The shading model tells me when I use the lighting model tells me how I compute color given the light. So we're going to talk about various lighting models. Before I get into lighting models, questions about our shading models. Shading model says where you compute lighting, and lighting model says what color will you get when you do, or how do you turn the light into color. Other questions? All right. To start talking about lighting, let's talk about, no, that isn't the Lambertia I want. I spelled it wrong. That's why. Nope, that's also not going to work. All right, I guess we aren't gonna do this. All right, we'll just dive right in. I thought it would be an amusing way of introducing something, but apparently the world has changed since the last time I tried that. So. How do you compute lighting? I have some object, okay? In general, our lighting models will take the following information. We'll have the point on the object. We will have the surface normal of the object. We will have what direction the light is found in. We will have what direction our eyeball is found in, okay? These are the basic pieces of information in addition to the color of the object, information about the material of the object. And the reason we use these pieces of data is partly because we're good at computing them. They're vectors, they're easy to find. But also partly because they allow us to compute what it is we want to know fairly easily. And we're going to start with a few basic laws, as they're called, about illumination, and then we're going to learn that they don't work and how we make ones that do. But they'll get us pretty close. And we're going to start with Lambert's law. Lambert's law says, well, let's actually, before we say Lambert's law, let's say the assumption Lambert's law works on. The assumption Lambert's law works on is after some photon hits the object, it has equal chances of going in any direction that isn't into the object. So it's exactly equally likely to go in any direction out of here. This is surprisingly close to true of many real materials. It is not obvious as you think about the physics and chemistry of materials why this would be true, but it seems to be relatively true in common practice. If this is the case, Lambert's law says something about how bright something will be based on the angle between the normal and the vector to the light. Okay, so if I take that angle between the normal vector and the vector to the light, the intensity of illumination will be based on the cosine of that. This comes from geometry. Okay? Although not necessarily a geometry that is easy to see. Mark, the illustration most commonly used in texts on Lambert's law has nothing to do with the geometry of actual illumination. But to understand the geometry of this, just in case you like geometry, okay, imagine I have some circle where all of the light is coming from this direction. So all of the light's coming in here. Clearly, this side back here is going to all be black, no light. Okay? And clearly right here, where the light hits it full on, we'll get all the light bouncing off. But let's consider this segment right here. Okay. If we consider this segment of the circle, let's actually just deal in 2D here instead of 3D for a moment. We take that edge of the circle. Its arc length, how long that segment is, compared to how much illumination it's receiving, the amount of illumination it's receiving is sort of this perpendicular, and how much space that's spread out of is based on its arc length, and so the ratio of those is how bright it appears. As that angle gets wider, we have more space to spread the amount of illumination over. So the relationship between that angle and the incident angle of light is Lambert's law, is this cosine behavior. Okay? Cosines, though, we don't compute cosines, because cosines can be computed from a dot product, which is just multiplication and addition. Okay? So Lambert's law, which is one of the ways of doing diffuse shading, diffuse because it goes everywhere, it gets diffused through the environment. Lambert's law, we just compute the normal vector, a unit length vector to the light, we take the dot product, that is how bright the light is. And then if the object or the light isn't white, we just multiply their colors together. Okay, let's try doing this with actual numbers to give a sense about what we mean, because numbers matter. All right, so let's suppose the color of our light in red, green, blue. Okay, let's suppose I'm going to use 0 to 1. Let's suppose it has a lot of red, some green, and no blue light. Okay, let's suppose the color of our object is going to be a lot of red, a lot of green, and a little blue. So we have orange light and a sort of a pale yellow object. Not that I expect you to be able to do that computation in your head, but I've been doing this a while. Anyway, so we have a yellow object, a light yellow object, we have an orange light. And we want to know what color will the light coming off be, and how bright will it be. Let's actually try doing all of these pieces. Let's suppose here that theta equals 30 degrees. Does anybody have to remember the cosine of 30 degrees? That's the sine. Yeah. So the cosine here is going to be the square root of 3 over 2. What is the square root of 3 over 2?
0.7.
It's what, 1.7 divided by 2, so it should be in the neighborhood of 0.8, like 0.83 something, I think. Something like that. Okay? So I have some cosine. I would get that with a dot product, and we probably could have done that instead. But let's just take this. Okay, so what does Lambert's law say the illumination of the object at that point is? Okay, Lambert's law says I'm going to take the material, the light, and this cosine, and multiply them together. With an element-wise multiplication of the colors, and then a distributive multiplication of the intensity. So I will end up saying that the red is going to be 1 times 1 times that 0.83. The green is going to be 1 times 0.5 times 0.83. Okay, and then my blue is going to be 0 times 0.5. I should have been more consistent in the order I wrote things in. Let's do that. Will be 0.5 times 0 times 0.83. And then I just work these through. This turns out to be 0.83. This word turns out to be 0.415, and this turns out to be 0. And that will be the brightness and color of that part of the object. This is Lambert's law. Often, because it is simple and easy, this is just called diffuse lighting, although there are other models of diffuse lighting as well. Question about Lambert's law, diffuse lighting, any of my math? Yes?
Why are you using decimals for colors instead of like 0 to 55?
Because the multiplication part doesn't work if I use 0 to 55.
Right.
So if you like 0 to 55, turn them to 0, 1 first, do your multiplication, turn them back. Or count how many times you multiply things together and then divide by that power of 255 at the end. That will also work, but is a little bit stranger. Other questions? Yes?
So like the general formula is to just do like light, the color of light times color of object times cosine.
Yep, it's the color of the material times the color of the light. That's an element-wise multiplication. And then that whole thing being scaled by the intensity, so the cosine of the angle. Sorry, that isn't always the sign for element-wise multiplication. I just did something so you would know it's weird. Yes?
I don't know if we want to deal with multiple lights yet.
I would just add them together.
But then couldn't you get a value above 1?
Yeah.
Then your colors will be too large.
Yep.
Have you then squash it back down into...
Yeah, you apply an exposure function, or you clamp them, or you just multiply everything by something small. In the real world, there's no upper limit to the number of photons coming off of an object, and so anything that pretends to work in the real world won't naturally stop at 1. Yeah?
So do we normally make the n and l vectors unit vectors?
Yeah, we typically make them unit vectors, and then the cross dot product gives us the cosine of theta. The law is about the cosine of theta.
Yeah, that's the other one I was going to ask. You said this is Lambert's law, like several things.
Sorry, the Lambert's law is that the intensity is the cosine. So, right, Lambert's law, this.
Okay, so when you have the bar for that, I think you also said.
This is an application of Lambert's law to colors. Yep. So the fact that I am multiplying. That, right? It's this multiplication here that is the application of Lambert's law. Other questions about Lambert's color? Yeah?
What classifies as a point? So in this case, each point would be like a vertex or a pixel?
That depends on the shading model. So if it's Garot shading, it would be a vertex. If it is Phong shading, it would be each pixel. Other questions? Yeah?
If you're meeting in some weird corner, is the normal just like how do you compute the normal of?
You let the artist do it. Okay? So we usually assume that artists were trying to approximate some smooth object with a bunch of polygons, and that whatever their graphics program is gave me the normals of the real smooth object, not the approximate polygons. There are approximations we could do where we compute the normals of all of the incident polygons and try to average them in some way, but averaging them is surprisingly complicated, and we could go into that. This whole space of computer-aided geometric design is that space, and I know quite a bit about it, but it's more conversation than we want to have today. Other questions? All right, this is Lambert's law. This gives us the basics of diffuse lighting. Let's just briefly. Diffuse lighting is not the only kind of lighting, but let us talk a little bit about where it goes wrong. So this page is actually about specular lighting, but let's look at the list of common shading algorithms. Notice here that Wikipedia's list of common shading algorithms has 3 common diffuse reflection. Okay, Lambert, we just talked about Lambert, hurrah. Then we have Oren Mayer and Minnaert. Oren Mayer's article actually has some recent pictures, so let's talk about Oren Mayer. Oren Mayer says, hey, we took a picture of a mug, and we 3D scanned it and tried to render it with Lambert's law, and it looks wrong. Okay, this is the motivating image. And then the thought is, I think I know why this is. I think objects are bumpy at a micro scale. Let's apply Lambert's law to bumpy at a micro scale and see what happens. Okay? And you can work through this, so they go through, this article talks about how you all end up doing it, and this is their final conclusion. This is actually from one of the papers that introduced this. Photograph, scan with Lambert, scan with Oren Mayer. It's better. It's not perfect. It's better. Okay? Some materials this works better with. It works actually quite well with clay. Fired clay is one of the things that Oren Mayer works the best with. Other things, varying levels of success. But this is an alternative approach. The math is more complicated. There's a lot more math to do, and you can read about how to do the math. I have never felt inclined to try to memorize the math involved in Oren Mayer. Okay? But Oren Mayer doesn't do everything we want to do. There's another popular reflectance model that doesn't have nice pictures. Minayert. This was invented by astronomers who were basically concerned that the moon didn't look like a sphere. I don't know if you ever thought about it, but if you imagine a ball floating around the Earth, and you think, what would a ball look like? Let's draw a ball up in the sky. You don't end up with a disk of uniform intensity, which is what the moon looks like. And why is that? So the Minayert is not, let's think about the math. It is literally, we looked at the moon and figured out what the moon looks like. We sent satellites up and looked at the Earth and figured out what the Earth really looks like. And this is the equation. That's it, right? There are, at the scale of a planet, there are so many things going on that trying to model all of them and how's dust matter when it's like spread out over everything, and there are so many things going on, just in aggregate, this math seems to work okay. And then there are, like, you can find these albedo constants that many Earth's things have. Astronomers have created them for most planets in the solar system. This equation seems to work for Saturn and so on as well. Huzzah. And so we can just use this for things like planets. And then some people said, hey, that also seems to sort of work for fill in the blank they discovered in the real world. We don't have a model, it's just this math seems to work and it's relatively simple to compute. Okay? They get messier than this. There are lots of messy lighting models because what really happens with light is too complicated to simulate, is basically what this boils down to. All right. Questions about diffuse lighting? Yes?
Wait, did that Wikipedia page say like shading models?
It probably did. Yeah. Yeah, the name of this Wikipedia page is Shading Algorithms.
But they're light.
They're lighting models. Notice they say illumination model. An illumination model they use fairly consistently throughout. But you use illumination to shade. We're fuzzy with terminology. Yeah. If you want to go to Wikipedia and rename the article, see how fast that gets shut down. Anyway, I have multiple times tried to change computer graphics articles in Wikipedia, and none of my changes have made it into the final edits, so I've given up.
So that should be lighting models?
These should be illumination or lighting models, yes. These are not shading algorithms. These are illumination algorithms. Although when they get to non-photorealistic, it sort of blurs the line. So anyway, the article sort of talks about both. All right. Any other questions about diffuse lighting? 8 minutes, let's see how far we can get for the next kind of lighting. All right, so one of the principles of diffuse lighting is it doesn't matter where you look at it from, okay? Notice, notably here, we had no E term in this math. The illumination at this point was dependent on N and L, but not E. So moving around should not change how bright it is. In this room, there are things that look differently bright as you move your head. Give me an example. The chair over there. As you move your head, the shine spots move. The tables in front of you. As you move your head, you see different lights above you. Your eyes, right? We have lots of shiny things in the world. So, shiny things exist. Let's talk about shininess. Shine. The principle underlying function of shine is really the same thing as reflection. But it's a little bit off. So it's like, I don't know, let's call it fuzzy. Fuzzy reflection. The idea, and usually we could model a full fuzzy reflection. Anything that is shiny in bright light is actually shiny in the whole world. Just, it doesn't shine very brightly, so you don't notice most of it. When we are doing fuzzy reflection of light sources, that we call, that combined fuzzy reflection of light sources is called specular lighting. Okay? And it just now occurs to me, I don't know why it's called specular. Maybe it's because you see specks. Huh. I've been teaching this in class for so many years, I've never thought to ask that question before. Anyway, it's called specular lighting. That's its name. Okay? And we have various models of specular lighting. The first successful model of specular lighting was the Phong model of specular lighting. Not to be confused with the Phong shading model. The Phong lighting model is about specular lighting. Okay? So, the Phong, yeah, let's just describe Phong. Phong is not that bad to describe. So I have an object. It has a normal. It has a vector to the light. It has a vector to the eye. Okay? The principle of the Phong model is some light bounces off like a mirror. So we're going to compute the bounce off of the light vector. So we're going to bounce the light vector across the normal. We're going to reflect it. Okay? This math is actually surprisingly easy in vectors, although I don't think we want to spend the time talking about how we do that. We come up with this reflection vector. Okay? Let's call it R. This is a reflection of the light vector across the normal vector. So R is we reflect L across N. And then we're going to look at this. Let's call that phi instead of theta because we're going to use theta for something for the same reason, way we used it last time. So we have phi. Okay? We're going to take the cosine of phi. Okay? That tells me how far away I am from being on the reflection. And if that's 1, I want a lot of reflection. If it's 0, I don't want any. But I want it to be fuzzy. But I don't want to be as fuzzy as the cosine, so I just raise that to some power. Not to infinity, to alpha. Okay? So just raise that to some power. I think Phong's original paper actually used k for that power, so sometimes that's used instead. Okay? The bigger that is, the smaller the shine spots are. But also, the brighter they are. Okay? We often refer to this as the hardness of something because hard objects tend to have mathematically a large alpha. This is always bigger than 1. It's usually bigger than 2. Often it's up in the 10 range, although it varies a little bit by object. Question?
So what exactly are you saying this is equal to like the amount of shine?
This is the amount of shine, yes. So this is the amount of shine. Now, unlike Lambert's law that is based on geometry, or the Oren-Neyer shader, which is based on, let's assume the world is made out of bumpy things, this is much more like Minnaert. This was, hey, we know how to compute this, and it makes shine spots. There's some rationale behind it, but it isn't based on a thorough understanding of physics. It's based on sort of a hand-wavy, light reflects, if that's close to the eye, things look bright. What do we mean by close to the eye? Well, cosines are easy to compute because of dot product, and powers are easy to compute because we can. Yes?
Do you, like, in addition to the, like, reflection intensity, do you also do, like, the diffuse shading?
Yes, so you virtually always do Lambert and Phong together.
Okay.
Because almost nothing only shines. Except mirrors and, I don't know, maybe polished black balls. Or polished black anything, right? Onyx. Yeah?
That is cosine to the alpha, or is it phi to the alpha?
Cosine to the alpha. Okay. Now, there's a problem with this. And the problem has to do that you have to keep recomputing a power. And powers are expensive. So other people came along, and the Blin-Phong model just says, we can do this math more efficiently. But we only have a minute, so we'll get to talk about Blin-Phong and other better lighting models when I see you on Thursday. I will see you all on Thursday.